Phil Donahue pioneered the modern television talk show. Donahue, his show, ran for 29 years and used its time to explore and to debate issues that mattered to its audiences. And despite being one of MSNBC's highest-rated programs, Donahue's brief return to television was canceled in February 2003. A leaked internal NBC memo stated that Donahue had to be fired because he would be, quote, a difficult public face for NBC in a time of war. Now Phil Donahue has collaborated with veteran documentary filmmaker Ellen Spirou to give us an unsanitized account of one young man's evolution from enlisted soldier to anti-war veteran. Thomas Young grew up in Kansas City, and like many patriotic young men and women, he responded to a call to action after 9/11. Yet after less than 1 week in Iraq, he received a bullet injury to the spine that paralyzed his body. The film Body of War intercuts two parallel stories. Thomas struggles to deal with the life-altering complexities of his injuries, while we see the congressional deliberations in October 2002, which granted President Bush authority to invade Iraq. Phil Donahue and The Donahue Show have been honored with 20 Daytime Emmy Awards, including 9 for Outstanding Host and a George Foster Peabody Broadcasting Journalism Award. The format Phil Donahue introduced on November 6, 1967, as The Phil Donahue Show on WLWD in Dayton, Ohio, launched the first audience participation television talk show and changed the face of American daytime television. He used that television talk show format to interview world leaders, celebrities, newsmakers, and people from all walks of life. And for over 29 years, he examined human behavior, focused national debates, and has provided a democratic forum for presidential candidates. For his outstanding contribution to television and American culture, Mr. Donahue was inducted into the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences Hall of Fame in November 20th, 1993. Welcome, Phil Donahue.
Thank you, Terrence. Pleased to be here.
I like listeners to get a feel for the people behind the ideas and the work and, in some cases, the reputations that we end up dealing with. So, first, what led you to broadcasting, and then how did you invent Donahue?
Well, as you said, Donahue was born in 1967. I was a news guy. I was, you know, the guy at local news, Channel 7, Dayton, Ohio. And I was the guy with the mic, you know, who would say to the fire chief, what it looked like when you got here, chief? And he'd say, it looked like a fire. What do you think? And you could see the building collapsing behind us. That was my life for maybe 4 or 5 years. I mean, City Hall, visiting dignitaries, covering the city commission and those and the cops. And suddenly two-way radio became big. I don't have to tell you about this. I'm sure you were. You remember, you could call in and actually you were on the air. I mean, it was huge. It was a big deal.
Right. I remember it mainly. It was contests on rock and roll stations.
I wasn't near that. But I just remember Westinghouse in Boston, WBZ, had a wonderful, and that's a 50,000 watt. I used to listen to it.
I used to listen to it in Florida.
And I thought, you know, I can do this. But in any event, inevitably, talk radio came to the radio station that I was working for. The news department serviced television and radio. So, we'll put Donahue in there. He knows the mayor. You know, I had a certain knowledge of the city and politics and so on. And I insisted that I have ability to have a guest on long distance. So you didn't have to come to Dayton, Ohio, which nobody knew where it was anyway, to be on my afternoon radio show. So I had Bobby Kennedy from his office in Washington. I remember we had Maria, not Maria Oswald, his mother. I can't remember.
Oh, I don't remember the mother's name.
Yeah, isn't that
Marina
well,
maybe. But
no, Marina was the wife.
Okay.
Anyway, people like that, you know, and Hugh Hefner and the housewives in Dayton could call up and actually talk to these. Well, my goodness, this, you know, we went, I mean, the ratings were just fabulous. Remember, this is first. You know,
right,
no one else
right,
had done
right.
this before. So somebody finally said along the way, why don't we do this on television? And I thought, I didn't know what we would do when the caller was talking. You know, what
right.
visual are you going
right.
to do? Somehow, first of all, we always flogged the callers. We wouldn't let anybody go on and on.
Mm-hmm.
We were very good at it. And we had a screener, you know, who said, turn your all of that. So we had a minimum amount of, am I on yet?
How many times have you heard?
Me? Yes, turn your radio down, please. Turn your radio down, please. Turn your radio down. So we went through all of that, and we suddenly looked up. Our first guest was Madeline Murray O'Hare, the atheist. So we knew we were visually dull. We had no stars. You know, stars didn't come to Dayton, Ohio.
Right.
So we had to survive on issues. And my first guest was the atheist who took prayer out of public schools. Well, kaboom, in Dayton, Ohio, they knew there was a new TV show on television at 10:30. And suddenly I looked up and we had an audience, which we inherited from another program. And I would be interviewing, grand interviewer that I am. And I noticed during the commercials, these women in the audience were asking very good questions. So one day I jumped out and here we are. And it was the audience that saved our show.
Great, of course, because some of the things that worked on radio wouldn't work on television.
I don't know if you remember those days. You never saw the audience of these shows. You would see them maybe through a rose-colored gel, you remember? Or yellow or green, whatever it was. The audience was told by a sign when to applaud. We took the cameras and pulled them behind the audience and moved the audience up to the stage. And our goal every day was to have a community develop between me, the guest, and the audience. And it almost always did.
Yeah. Let me ask you again about the 29 years of Donahue. What were a couple of your proudest moments?
Oh, my. We had Ann Rand, Atlas Shrugged. The Donahue Show featured Margaret Mead. The Donahue Show featured the first test tube baby from England. Louise Brown, right there on my stage. Imagine, test tube baby, back then.
Yeah.
Whoa. We had the Sepulvedas, a couple south of here, Loma Linda. Loma Linda's not going to be pleased with me bringing this up again. Loma Linda refused to transplant the kid because, I'm trying to be fair about this, but among other things, the parents smoked marijuana. So they literally chose not to transplant the kid. And it got in the paper, and the whole nation collapsed on top of Loma Linda.
Sure.
And they're on the show. The couple is on the show with little Jesse. Who needs a transplant. And the phone, I'm taking calls, and I took a call, and it was a nurse from, Battle Creek, somewhere in Michigan, and she said, "We have a heart." I mean, the audience stopped breathing. And the Sepulvedas took their baby, and I said, "Godspeed." And they left the studio in the middle of the show to go to, Michigan to have the transplant.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is. Alas, it has a sad ending. We lost Jesse after the operation. He lived a while, and I went to the funeral. And, you don't forget those things. I mean, his father played the guitar and sang a song. Oh, I'll never forget it. To name a few moments, sorry for talking so much.
You're
going to throw me these underhand pitches. I mean, get me out of here.
It was clear that you were back there for that moment. Let me say that I'm Terry McNally, and I'm speaking with the familiar voice of Phil Donahue, host for 29 Years of Donahue, and co-director and executive producer of a new documentary, Body of War. Before we move on to Body of War, let me ask you briefly about what I referred to at the top, about your experience at MSNBC. And to kind of put it in a context and kind of hit two birds with one stone, I want to hear about what happened there. And then if you'd reflect a little bit on MSNBC's Keith Olbermann.
Well, God bless Keith Olbermann, and let's hope he has a long and successful life on TV. He is in my time slot.
I know, and they're letting him do things that...
Well, it only took almost 4,000 bodies to come home from this war. And now people are saying, well, maybe. The experience, I went back to on the air because I couldn't believe what everybody wanted to bomb something. Everybody wanted to bomb somebody. And all I was saying was, well, wait a minute. I was against the bombing of Afghanistan. I said, we're dropping bombs on people who live in caves? Should the most powerful nation on earth be doing this? I thought, well, hell, people who hate my message will listen. We'll be different because everybody else was beating the war drum. The Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the L.A. Times, the Boston, the Chicago Tribune, name a paper.
The Washington Post as much as anybody.
I mean, and the nation's heartbeat started to.
And every expert you saw was some retired general.
And those who were against the war before the invasion of 2003 muted themselves. it's a fascinating study, really, in behavior. As this nation prepared to go to war, and it was clear we were going, you had to shut up and sing. Every anti-war personality on MSNBC muted themselves when the run-up to the war began. It's important to know the pressure that came down on the people in media. You were a wimp if you didn't support the war. You were not patriotic. You didn't support the troops. You weren't really an American. You were, on and on. The business of marginalizing the dissenting voice was so total that we had almost no dissent at all.
As someone, I was on a panel once, and I'm not remembering her name right now, but she had been, I think, at CNN at the time. She said her belief was that what they did was they tested. You know, they focused group and polled, and they said, what do people want to hear?
Absolutely
and
so.
And then that dictated what you would
she
report.
She was right. I think you may be speaking of Ashley Banfield.
I think her name is Christine Bergeron.
Oh, well.
But she's written a book called Buzzsaw, which is about people who got censored. In any case, but that was her interpretation, that they fed back to the audience what the audience was in the mood for, regardless of the truth.
Well, they took focus groups on me. They'd put, 35 people in a room and show them a tape of one of my shows. I remember they showed one of me and Koppel. I interviewed Koppel, had him on the show, and I did challenge him. Now, remember, this is before the invasion. And I said, well, tell me what you think. He said, I can argue it both ways. I said, well, give me the thing for war. Well, what if we have to, weapons of, because you can't be and you ought to. And I kept saying, I said to him, what if? Do you want to go to war on what if?
Or on best case scenario, which was the other side of it.
They took the focus group survey of me, 35 people. I guess you pay $1,500. There are companies out there will put 35 normal, average people, whatever they are, in the room. 85% of the people who saw that program did not like me.
Uh-huh.
I was called into the office of the president of NBC News, and like a schoolboy being scolded, it's amazing. To be in the news on television today is, certainly to be between a rock and a hard place. You're supposed to tell people what they don't want to know, and you won't succeed unless they like you.
Right.
So you have to be popular, which is a very difficult thing to be when you're reporting news they don't want to hear.
Exactly.
So it's the problem. That's why we had such a lemming-like mainstream media when the president... And I also believe, most of these large media companies have boards of directors made up of white male Republicans, for which belief I do not think they should be waterboarded. But we should have more than that view at the top. It's and dissent is not good for business.
Right.
Dissenters are crabby. They're never satisfied. I mean, how many people have said that to me? That's the trouble with you liberals. You don't really love America. I had my colleagues say that to me. So it was a big, I never have been this naive in my life. I actually thought I thought I'd stay and people would watch because I'm different.
Right.
People who hated what I was saying would watch. But we never really got the chance. We were on the air maybe 4 or 5 months in, before the invasion, before the American troops rolled into Baghdad. In March of 2003, we were gone.
Yeah, you were gone in late February,
right.
So that they could go into the march into Baghdad without your dissenting voice on the air.
And that's why I'm fascinated with Keith Olbermann and wish him well. He's doing things that I would. I mean, they would have absolutely... turned blue if I said things like that.
Yeah. I mean, he just doesn't have a guest on to say it. He's doing those special comments. Another one, I think, last night on torture and Mukasey. This is your first experience as a co-director.
Yes.
Is it your first experience making a documentary? And then how did this happen?
Well, I had done a number of things for example, I did a 5-part series that aired at night across the board in 1985 on MSNBC titled The Human Animal.
Oh,
it was about, why do we behave this way? Who are we? What determines, how we behave? And why are we always at war? And why are men so aggressive? And it did very well. But I didn't direct it and I didn't produce it. I hit my mark, and by the way, I didn't pay for it, a big difference. So this is the first one that I... And I was very blessed to find a cinematographer who is my co-director and partner by the name of Ellen Spiro. Ellen teaches documentary making at the University of Texas at Austin. And here we are after almost 3 years of working together. You know, she still likes me. This is a tremendous achievement. And, you know, you have two people driving one horse, riding one horse. And yet we somehow... You know, we've certainly had creative differences, but we worked them out, and here we are. And,
yeah. You don't need to respond to this, but one of the things that I mused about was how, having done a show which was made up on the fly for all those years, what an opposite experience it is to be in an editing room thinking about, do we cut 2 seconds earlier or one second later?
Yes.
I mean, when you do the recitation of the votes for the invasion, some are quick, some are short. You know, I mean, all those decisions, such an opposite experience from that spontaneous work you did for so many years.
Absolutely so. But somehow, I mean, so many wonderful things happened. I mean, I got very, very lucky. My first break was Ellen. Ellen Spiro is just wonderful. Everything she shot was usable. It's just, I can't get over her talent.
Tell people what is Body of War. I referred to it at the top, but you know radio. People have tuned in since then. You link two stories. One focuses on an individual. One focuses on Congress.
And the part of the film that focuses on Congress focuses on the October 2002 Iraq War debate, which everyone who sees our movie will realize was a superficial bumper sticker debate. Robotic senators and House members got up. A smoking gun can become a mushroom cloud.
When you show how every one
amazing
of them is repeating
White House,
the same talking points.
White House Iraq Group, WIG. These were the ad agency warriors who gave us shock and awe. They name our wars like their video games. Well, these are the same people who gave the talking points to the Congress. A gun smokes after it's been fired. And another senator says, a gun smokes after... And by the time the third, fourth person says this, you're saying to yourself, this is the debate that brought us this, the most serious, horrible, massive foreign policy blunder of my lifetime.
Yeah. And the thing that you see in that piece of it, as you say, is that... Clearly, there was no debate. Clearly, these people did not take their responsibility seriously.
It's
the
amazing
same people who didn't read the Patriot Act before they passed it,
you're
almost
right
unanimously.
That's absolutely so.
So, and the other side is one individual, Thomas Young.
Right.
How did you run into him?
I was visiting my old friend Ralph Nader in Washington, on whose campaign I had been a participant in 2000. And then to save my marriage, I got off the bus in 2004. I mean, Marla was really upset with me, and I was going to elect another Republican, and who do I think I am? So I got off. I got off the bus. After the election, I went to see him. I thought, well, if anybody needs a hug, you know, because Ralph was really taking incoming. And we go back to
60. I know you do. He was the most frequent guest you ever had on your show.
He was. And during our conversation, he said, a mother at Walter Reed wants to see me. Do you want to go? I said, yeah, I'd never been to Walter Reed. So back I fly a week later, and off me and Ralph. Well, this kid, you could hardly see him in the sheets because he was so pale. You could see his cheekbones. He was wall-to-wall morphine. I met his mother. By the way, I don't think he remembers this visit at all. And I learned about the gravity of his injury. He's a T4, which means his spine was severed. Anatomists know what that means. He is paralyzed from the chest down. And to see this young man close up, you know, the closer you get to this, you look at this kid. He has bowel and bladder problems. You know, you see a person in a wheelchair, oh, poor person, he can't walk. It's a lot more than that.
And when people see the film, they will see that.
Yeah, they will. This is a very close-up look at the harm in harm's way.
Very close-up look.
Right. If this Congress had obeyed the Constitution, you know, only Congress can declare war. They didn't declare war. they put their hand over their eyes and they handed a piece of paper to the president, which said, you know, if you think that way, when he goes to war, if it doesn't work, they can say, well, we didn't realize, we didn't.
If I knew now.
Yeah. So you have it's a third rail issue and nobody wants to take it. It's awful. James Madison, as you saw, it's too much of a temptation for one man. Only Congress can declare war. It's the most fabulous feature of our Constitution. Don't give one man the Army, the Navy, or the Marines. He'll get on his horse, he'll draw his sword, and march to glory. I mean, they will. This is how men behave. And the framers knew this. They knew it, and we ignore it. I can't get over it.
Yeah.
The people who give prizes to young people for speaking at Daughters of the American Revolution banquets, a Rotary, Why I'm Proud to Be an American. These are the same people who abandoned the Constitution first. They have people in cages, no papers, no Red Cross, no phone calls, lawyer, no family, no nothing. This is not the country that I was raised to pledge allegiance to. This is horrible what's happening. These radicals in Washington, bring them on. The next president who's tempted to say, bring them on. I want to say to him, I have a soldier for you. Before you make this decision, I want you to meet the 1st Cavalry's honorably discharged United States Army Specialist, Thomas Young. A Heartland kid, Kansas City, signed up 9/13, wanted to get the evildoers.
Wanted to go to Afghanistan.
Watched the president on top of the pile. He was at Fort Hood training when the light bulb went on for him. Why am I going to Iraq? But, you know, you're at Fort Hood, not too many people, you know, want to pick it while they're in basic. So off he goes. He's there 5 days and he gets shot.
Yeah. And as he describes it, he says that he was in a 2.5-ton pickup, two-and-a-half-ton truck with a bunch of soldiers, unprotected and unarmored. He said we were
and
like...
And no top.
That's what I'm saying. So they just were shot by a sniper. This wasn't a roadside bomb.
Fish in a barrel.
Shot by a sniper. Yeah. And he says it's like shooting ducks in a barrel.
Yes, he does say that.
You're listening to KPFK. This is Free Forum. I'm Terry McNally, and I'm speaking with Phil Donahue, the longtime host of Donahue and the co-director and executive producer of a new documentary called Body of War, which is what we're talking about right now. Body of War intersperses the personal story of a young, the wounded veteran that we talk about, and the vote by the Senate. We see the Senate vote 77-23 to authorize Bush to go into Iraq if he wants to, which I would say is the wounding of the Constitution.
Oh, in so many ways, really. Wiretaps. I mean, it's, a rendition. And why is torture such a complicated, controversial, you know, the next American prisoner who gets tortured in some woebegotten place with no media, no flashlights, no nothing. I mean, how can the president live with the knowledge that we're going to get what we gave?
Of course. That's why John McCain is so... But and that's so clearly against that. One of the things, by the way, that's happening on the torture issue right now, Phil, is it's come out that Daniel Levin, do you know about this?
No.
Someone within the Justice Department whose job it was to give opinions about what was torture and what mm-hmm. wasn't, actually went and asked to be waterboarded.
Wow.
He was waterboarded, and for anyone who doesn't know it, look it up. Google waterboarding. When they say simulated drowning, you go, oh, so what is this, some psychological thing? No. What it is that they let enough blood into your lungs so that you feel that you're dying. And so he went through it, but he had the right
enough
to stop.
Enough water, him. I think you mean.
Yeah, what did I say?
Blood.
Oh, water.
Enough water, yeah. As in pneumonia or drowning.
Right.
Yes.
And
yes.
So Levin went through this, but he had he could stop it. So he stopped it, and then he said, this is torture, and they fired him.
You're kidding.
No. That's what happened, and that just came out. That's what Oberman was talking about yesterday.
Right.
So we've got about two more minutes. What's your feeling having made this film about the film and about where we stand in Iraq?
Well, my first feeling is that the American people will never be safe or feel safe until we have leaders in Washington who reach out rather than lash out. We appear to all the world to be a warrior nation. And it is also clear, as Norman Solomon has instructed us in a book titled War Made Easy, if a United States president wants a war, he can have one. Americans must return to the original vision of the framers. Only Congress can declare war. We should return to the tradition of diplomacy. And we should remind ourselves how much we have to sell. This is a fabulous democratic experiment we are all part of, most of us by accident of birth. I mean, what a wonderful document is the United States Constitution. I mean, it protects the powerless against the tyranny of the majority. It's a fabulous idea. And we should be selling it to the rest of the world in our own civil, courteous, generous, respectful way. Instead, we're like a giant stomping around the playground. We're beating our chest and we're saying we're the last remaining superpower. Well, you know, the more you say that, the more you feel you have to somehow prove it. Mm. And if you spend $500 billion a year, $500 million a year.
500 billion.
Okay, you're right, billion. Sorry, B.
But who's
billion?
Counting?
That's $500 billion a year on things that go boom. Yeah. If you do that, you're going to use them.
Yeah.
You can't. I mean, otherwise, why have them? And then the arms merchants will say, hey, wait a minute, hold it. There's a lot of profit here. We got to keep this up. You can't do it unless you scare the people. And the Bush administration has had a very long run of the politics of fear. It worked. If you scare the people, you can do almost anything.
Okay, that's the voice of Phil Donahue. Again, the film is Body of War. The site to learn more about it is bodyofwar.com. Thank you to G, my engineer, Stan Mizrahi in production, Matt Perez in traffic. To you, my listeners, I look forward to being with you again next week. Email me at temcnally@mac.com with questions and comments, or if there's someone that you want to hear on the show, or temcnally@mac.com if you want to get on my weekly list telling you who's going to be on and what we're going to talk about. Thank you, Phil Donahue. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Terrence.